House Committee on Revenue will come to order, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2040, the bill which eliminates teacher experience as a factor in school district funding formula. Steve?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2040 does delete the teacher experience factor from the equalization formula beginning in 07-08. If you'll recall from the orientation, that teacher experience factor is $25 multiplied by the difference between the district average teacher experience and the state average teacher experience. And because there's a difference there, it's positive for some districts and negative for other districts. The difference when it's multiplied by the $25. And so it does shift money between or among the school districts. And you have a table there attached or in your material that gives you a list by district of the average years and the difference for that district from the state average. And then what I have done is to run the formula both with and without, with the teacher experience being the current law, without being labeled the House Bill 2040 version, and you can see the difference there. So you can get an idea of which districts are affected and roughly by how much. Note that this is data for 06-07, not 07-08. I don't have data yet for 07-08 to use from the Department of Education. But there's about 87 districts that would gain from taking this out of the formula, and about 110 districts that would lose dollars by taking the teacher experience factor out of the formula. The other part of the bill deals with the Successful Schools Fund. It establishes the fund and transfers money from the State School Fund to the Successful Schools Fund. The concept is that taking the teacher experience factor out of the formula will generate revenue, or that there's revenue associated with that, and that would then be put in through the Successful Schools Fund. But in effect, because the teacher experience factor is both positive and negative, the total dollars can either be positive or negative. So, and I don't know what it's based on 06-07. We don't have the teacher experience factors for 06-07 yet. But given the data we have, that would be a negative amount, and so there would be no transfer from what we know right now. So I'm not sure that that was fully understood when the drafting was done, that taking the teacher experience factor out would somehow generate revenue to put into the Successful Schools Fund. But it also then would change the Successful Schools program by adding a couple qualifications, a performance qualification and an adequate yearly progress to qualify for the incentive awards from the Successful Schools program. And it would also change the amount of the award from a minimum of 1,000 per teacher to no more than 1,000 per teacher for those districts that qualify.
Thank you. I think we'll hear from Brian Reeder. Brian?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Brian Reeder from the Department of Education. Here today primarily just to provide background information, and I think Steve has done a good job of that. As written, the way that this bill tries to capture money from the teacher experience factor, it really doesn't do that. So if the desire or the intent of this bill is to generate revenue for the Successful Schools Fund, it really needs to try and approach it in a different way.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Could we maybe have just a little bit of the history of the of how we got to the formula that where we had the distribution for teachers' experience based upon their experience? What was the genesis of that, and at that time, who did it benefit? And give us some of the history, and then maybe if you would please, Brian, if we are no longer going to reward schools that have or that have short teacher tenure or long teacher tenure, I need to have a little history on that, please.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I'll give it a shot. Steve can jump in here because he probably knows more about it than I do. But my understanding is when the formula was first put in place, it was recognized that based on the way districts in Oregon pay their teachers, which is primarily based on years of experience, that districts with above average experience teachers have higher costs than those with below average experience simply because they pay higher salaries. And so this adjustment was put in place to give slightly more money, $25 per added year of experience per weighted student to those high experience districts, and then similarly take away $25 per year of experience per weighted student for below average districts. And so it was a way to move money from low experience districts to high experience districts because the high experience districts were deemed to have higher costs due to salary schedules.
And the second part of that question is, so once we remove the opportunity or that encouragement to have the longer tenured teachers, what might be the effect of that, if anything?
Well, and Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, it's hard to know how districts would respond to the removal of this adjustment. I mean, clearly, having higher experienced teachers generates for you additional revenue, but it also means you have higher costs. So, you know, whether or not districts would respond by hiring lower experienced teachers when they had the opportunity is hard to say. I'm not sure any of us have any information to predict that sort of thing.
And final question from you.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Brian, is there any indication that your comment was that the reason that the original distribution formula went in to provide a few dollars extra for these longer tenured teachers, because typically those longer tenured teachers were in fact costing more, is there any evidence that you've experienced that the teachers' salaries for those longer tenured teachers has gone down, thus obviating the reason for this particular change in the formula?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, at the time this was put in place, district salary schedules were based on education and experience, and they still are. So I'm not sure that we've seen any change in the way districts compensate their teachers. It's based on a fairly rigid salary schedule that still is based almost exclusively on education and years of experience. Now, the relationship of highly experienced to less experienced teachers in terms of their relative salaries may be different today than it would have been had we not put this in place, but I don't know that we have any real way of knowing that either. It's difficult to discern whether you've changed behavior by putting something in place if you don't have an alternative to compare it to, and I don't think we really have an alternative to compare it to in Oregon because we've always had these, or at least in the recent past, we've had these salary schedules that are really fairly rigidly tied to experience and education.
Mr. Chair, I guess I just would be concerned, and I appreciate the fact that a teacher with more experience and more education would be able to take that teaching skill and move it around, maybe shop in an adjacent district to bring more resource and to, in effect, broaden their horizons in another district. That isn't a likelihood in Southern Harney County, however. So that's just something that I do have concern. Thank you.
Other questions? We're on House Bill 2040. Any other questions of this witness or comments? Do we have anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 2040?
That's strange. Nobody wants to answer.
Yes, sir. Come forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Markey representing the Equity Steering Committee, which is a small group of school districts that have been involved in the equity issue in this building for a very long time. Just a piece of information that I wanted to give the committee that I think should be in front of you. I was involved when this particular piece was added to the formula, and it was really kind of the brainchild of a superintendent from Coos Bay by the name of Giles Parker, who was actively engaged in the development of the formula. And I think the piece that wasn't said here was that it was put in the formula in part because school districts with declining enrollment tend to have teachers with longer tenure on the average because they're not hiring new teachers. And so if you look at your the information that Legislative Revenue gave you, I think you'll see some amount of correlation between high cost of teachers and growth of districts. Higher growing, faster growing districts will tend to have, in many instances, more new teachers and therefore less expense. And districts like Coos Bay and perhaps Harney County, you'll find have teachers, because they're not hiring new teachers, and through no fault of their own, they're on the one hand losing money out of the formula because they have fewer students, and they're not hiring any teachers, and so the cost of their workforce is increasing every year. And I just wanted to give you that piece of history. That was the reason it was put in, and I think it was valid then, and I think it's still valid today.
Questions?
And by the way, not all of the districts I represent have a declining enrollment. So
you have some on both sides?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Just a quick perusal of the list while you were talking would suggest that you're right about that. The districts I know about that are fast growing would benefit substantially from this change, and those that are in slow declining enrollment situations that I'm familiar with, at least, are all on the negative side on this list.
Mr. Chair, just looking
Representative
at,
Butler.
Just looking at the schools in the four counties that I represent, I can see $500,000 going away very rapidly, and of course those are declining enrollment schools primarily. No more lumber mills in Baker County and Grant County.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Kelser.
Thank you. Both of the school districts in my legislative district would also be hit pretty hard by the elimination of the teacher experience factor. I think that having this factor makes sense both for those reasons of declining enrollment and expanding enrollment, but it also gives districts that ability to have flexibility in bargaining when they're compensating their employees. Because you'll have bubbles of teachers that move up and retire at a certain point in time, and that's true even in our declining enrollment district in Corvallis. Within a couple of years, we will have a very young teaching force because many of our teachers will retire. The state school fund will adjust to that and will rise as our teacher experience rises, which helps us to do a better job in local school districts with allocating to our teachers.
So I think your comment suggests that these numbers are not permanent. They're temporary as the workforce moves through the system.
They are temporary, and they're also dependent upon the teacher experience, how that's moving within other school districts. When I served as a school board member, one of the parts of this formula that was frustrating when we got to balancing a budget is that you really don't know what your teacher experience factor is until the next year, because everyone's teacher experience needs to be calculated. Then you need to know where you fall on the list to see where, because your average depends on everybody else's average as well.
Okay, thank you. Other comments? Is there anyone else? Thank you very much. We appreciate that insight and information, and I have to admit I had not made that correlation. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 2040? If not, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2040. I'm sorry, the public hearing on 2040. Thank you, Representative Butler. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2396. Steve, would you like to give us the summary on this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2396 deals with the calculation of average daily membership as it's used in the school equalization formula. It doesn't change the definition of average daily membership directly, but what it changes is a component part, and that's average daily membership by changing the definition of aggregate days membership. Got to keep those two straight. Aggregate days membership is currently the number of days present plus number of days absent for the students in the district. What this bill does is changes days absent to those days of excused absence. So it would be days present plus days of excused absence. That would be aggregate days membership, and then that would affect the amount of average daily membership, the ADM count. Also, by affecting that ADM count, it would lower it, but then at the same time, it would change or lower the 11% of that average daily membership that the IEP students can qualify under. So that would lower that cap as well a little bit. It would take effect in July 1 of 08, so it would first affect the 08-09 school year. I don't have, and the department doesn't have, information on number of days of excused absence, so I can't really give you a district-by-district comparison with and without this change. What I have in the impact statement, though, is the number of school districts and the percent of days absence that they have reported. Just to give you a rough idea of how that varies and how the number of excused days absence might vary. But the problem is it's probably not a constant factor of days absent. And so it's really difficult to try and get at what the district-by-district comparison would be.
Thank you.
Question, Steve.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. So, Steve, if I read your graph here, it appears that the median is that in 05-06, the total of number of days absent was somewhere between 6 and 8% average in the center of the graph there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's correct.
And so, six to eight percent, between 6 and 8%, which would be one day and 12.
12 to 15.
Yeah, one day and 12 to 15 exactly of an absence. So a student is absent on average about twice a month, it sounds like.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, if I remember correctly, the average was just pretty close to 7%.
Okay.
Statewide.
One out of 14. Once a month and then another time in the 3 month period.
Oh, that's right, because you're only
21 days in the average month. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the calculation of the absences, how do you calculate the absence of an elementary student comes to school for a full day versus a high school student that might have an absence for a period of the day because he sleeps late and doesn't come until second period? Does that count as a full absence in this calculation equivalent to the absence of a third grader?
Do you know that, or shall we leave that to Mr. Reeder?
I would suggest Mr. Reeder try to answer that.
Okay. We have asked the sponsor of the bill to come down and testify if she wants to, but I think we'll hear from Mr. Reeder first, and that may be one of the questions he should address.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, and Brian Reeder, Department of Education. To answer Representative Gelser's question, most districts, and I believe under the law, districts are supposed to take attendance, official attendance, twice a day. in the once in the morning and once in the afternoon. So if you're a high school student, and I think you're referring to my son,
really good.
Sleeping in, and misses the morning attendance taking, then he or she will be absent half a day. And if they then are there in the afternoon, they'll be present half a day. So we break the day in half.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, in an elementary school, if a student comes to school and for whatever reason doesn't stay all day, they could be present for half a day and absent for half a day. Typically, we don't see that. We see students who are either absent the whole day or present the whole day.
Thank you.
Did you have other comments?
Just a little more background.
Representative Rosenbaum?
I just have a question, and maybe for staff, but when this analysis talks about a shift, does this just add more money to some districts, or does it also take money away from others?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, it would go both ways.
Is that because it's a zero-sum game?
Yes. Yeah. There's no additional money to the state school fund. You're just redistributing what's available.
The denominator becomes different, mm-hmm. and each district's numerator would be a little smaller, or a little larger, maybe.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gelser.
Just one further clarification on that previous question. So if attendance is taken twice a day, and it's that high school student, they don't come in the morning, they come in the afternoon, for the purposes of this average, where it looks like a kid has an absence once every 14 days, if he didn't come at all, would that be two absences? If he came late, would that be half an absence? Or does that count as a whole absence? That total.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Gelser, we do everything on a daily basis. So if that student is there in the morning and not there in the afternoon, then they are there for half a day. Or they were absent for half a day. And so if you look at the way we collect the data for a particular student, we would say for the whole year they may have been present for 135 and a half days, and they were absent for 22 and a half days. And that's the kind of data that we collect.
Well, thank you. And the reason I'm asking the question is having, as an average statewide, students having an unexcused absence once every 14 or so days seems somewhat alarming. But I'm wondering how that average might be impacted by high school students.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything against high school students, but students that are coming later where attendance is taken differently than elementary kids just not coming to school.
One of the things that Representative Gelser that might make you feel a little better about that is, as Representative Butler points out, the numbers that we have here are all absences, not just unexcused absences.
Okay.
So there might be any number of reasons that are perfectly legitimate why a student would miss class on a given day. And I suspect that substantial percentage of absences are excused. And maybe that's something I should ask as a question.
Well, Chair Barnhart, as Steve said, we don't have that data because we have never collected that data. And under this bill, we would have to start doing that.
Right.
We would have to modify our ADM collection system and start requiring districts to distinguish between excused absences and unexcused absences.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Or Steve?
Just a comment. I believe, if I read the statutes correctly, districts have the authority to specify what they consider an excused absence versus a non-excused absence as well. So if you went this route, you would want some uniformity in that process.
Right. And that gets me to my other question, and that is there a definition now in our laws or in your rules of excused absences versus unexcused absences that you're aware of? And as you read this bill, is there one? I'll ask the sponsor this question, too, in a minute. But in this bill, is there a definition?
Chair Barnhart, I'm not aware that we currently have a definition in law, and I don't see one in this bill either.
Yeah.
So, you know, as Steve said, since we, at the moment, leave it up to districts, if we didn't put something in place to create a definition and some uniformity, I suspect we would still see all absences be excused absences. Districts would simply define away an unexcused absence because they would lose money any time that occurred. So we certainly would need to define that for every for everyone.
And does the department have the authority to write these kinds of definitions?
Chair Barnhart, I have the authority to write rules to implement the law, so if the law itself didn't specify this, then certainly we could do it in rule.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Reeder before we hear from Representative Comp? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there sanctions district by district for unexcused absences, or where we're not keeping track, does it really make any difference at all if a student just isn't showing up for 2 days a week and then happens to have a sickness on the third day of the week? Is it just all the same?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I am not aware of any sanctions in either state law or under NCLB reporting regulations that distinguish between an excused and an unexcused. Under NCLB, the attendance rate is a factor that's used, but that simply looks at days in attendance versus days not in attendance.
For whatever reason.
And it doesn't, for whatever reason, it does not distinguish between excused and unexcused absences.
Gee, all this time they had me in the fear of the Almighty for playing hooky, and all that time I just could have just done it. They didn't feel right about going to school or something.
Representative Butler, I know that your teachers and principals would have noticed you were gone.
Well, they were always happy when I was gone.
No doubt.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. If you would mind sticking around for a few minutes, we'll hear from Representative Comp, and it's possible we may have some more questions for you. Thank you, Representative.
Glasses on, glasses off. Thank you. It's my honor to be here, Chair Barnhart, members of the Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, and I very much want to thank you for hearing this bill. You've already picked up on some of the purposefulness of looking at this in a transparent and accountable way for schools to help our students. I have written testimony. I think you probably have it. In your bill summary, it specifies that excused absences are to be used in calculating days of membership or attendance for the purpose of distributing the state school fund. Now, just what does that mean? Currently, schools receive funds by a process called average daily membership. The words membership and attendance can be interchanged according to Oregon statutes. And under the current law, schools receive funds for every student who has been in attendance for at least 1 day out of 10. They get full funding for that. Not 10 calendar days, but actual school days. To show the worst example of how this affects schools is in the month of November, when we have very few instructional days. We have Thanksgiving holidays, we have parent conferences, and a number of things that happen in the month of November. If a student attends two or three of those days out of the entire month, the school gets full compensation. House Bill 2396 will change the allocation to only to the days in which students have been in attendance and include the days in which the student is excused. And to answer the question, there is rules, administrative rules, that clearly define what is an excused absence and what is not. A student that, there's only three reasons why a student should be excused from school. And that is if they are sick, if there's a family emergency, and for religious holidays. Nothing else is considered an excuse. For example, taking your tux back after prom and being out all day is not an excused absence. It is not an excused absence to get your senior pictures taken on a school day. And the list goes on and on and on. And parents will say, my son or daughter is excused for, you know, January 15th. The school has the authority and the right, not the parent, to excuse the absence. That is clearly stated in administrative rules. 33 states work under this system. And I am bringing this bill to you because I am a person here about students, not about the money, not about anything else. Obviously, the amount of allocated funds that schools get is not changed through this statute. It's just, you know, helping students or putting a support system, a safety net under students that tend not to come back to school after lunchtime if they're in high school, or as they're in junior high, if their parents think that they're going to school and they stop off at the local store or their other places than where they should be. Because there's three direct results. And the first one is obviously student achievement. If a student's in class, they're missing, not in class, they're missing instruction. They are skipping, they're missing out on a big part of their instruction. The impact on the teacher and the entire class is dramatic, because then the teacher is going back to reteach to a student that doesn't have an excused absence, taking time away from other students, and there's really no way to compensate for that first time instruction. They've missed just the heart and the being of why a lesson's being taught. So there's a direct correlation about student achievement if a student is not there to have the instruction. The biggest dynamic that I learned from states that were doing this, it lowered their dropout rate. Again, it's the same thing, and it goes right into student safety. As parents, they expect us as schools and school administrators and teachers, when their child, when they leave, particularly with all the working parents out there today, when they leave and they think that their child, 5-10 minutes later, is walking to school, and they just choose to stay home. I will tell a personal story. I just couldn't believe it. I had a student that for over 6 months, and this is a problem in the system, because we had called, he'd been out of school so long. At the first part of it, we thought he was a dropout. We thought he was going to another school, no records request. He spent 6 months at home, and his parents didn't know it. And finally, somebody ratted him out. Very bright young man. And so he, once he got caught, you know, I mean, it doesn't really have to do with the compensation piece, but it's like somewhere in the system broke down not to check on this student sooner. I mean, and it just happens. And that leads to the biggest issue as far as student safety. This student that I'm referring to decided to stay home. I know of numerous middle school children that go shopping or sit and have, you know, a Coke with their friends or whatever when their parents think they're in school. If the system would have a dramatic turnaround, as a middle school principal, if we have the fiscal piece that goes with that, our policy in the school was if a student, you know, if a student's marked absent and we hadn't heard with by a note or phone call by 9 o'clock in the morning, we call the parents home and say, you know, was Susanna coming to school today? We haven't heard from you. And frequently they go, well, we'll get back to you. You know, and they get back to us, or the student will walk in the door 15 minutes later. And the student safety issue is big. As a parent, I relied on my school system to let me know if my daughters were skipping. They were the only people that could help me out as a single parent. And that's, well, I knew all the teachers, too. But it's like, you know, other people in bigger systems, they don't have that type of ability just to make sure that everybody's where they're supposed to be. And so I just ask you to consider this bill. And literally, it's not a change in any actual fiscal allocations. It creates a, like I say, a safety net under students that hopefully that it's schools don't get paid if this child's unexcused, then they'll be following up sooner to make sure that the student is there, the student's safe, and the student is becoming more academically successful. I appreciate your time, and I am available for any questions. My second year is a short side story. When I was an assistant principal, I had a brand new principal, and he says, Betty, you only have one job. And he says, and that's attendance. And I can just about state every chapter and verse there is about absences, excused, and unexcused. And what we did a dramatic change. In 18 months, we took our dropout rate from 15% to 8% because I tracked those kids, and every time we had even one period, believe it or not, now this is how much I really care about kids and their parents. If they even skipped one class period, their parents had to come in and see me before they could return to any of their classes. We got results, and we got results fast. And the kids, the students were more successful. And, I mean, I couldn't believe how much it changed our dropout rate in just 18 months. So, but it takes time and it takes energy. But we love our kids, and if this helps, I hope you can support me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will note that some other people who wanted to be heard today are not here because they're in a long scheduled meeting, so we will be having another hearing on this bill. But if we have questions now, yes, sir, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Conk, you're my go-to person for these kinds of issues anyway, and I've tried to get a handle on this issue of the ADM, or the average daily attendance, as opposed to membership. So under reading your testimony, under the current law, schools receive funding for every student who has been in attendance at least one of 10 days. Why do we talk about the ADM, W or ADM, or not W, ADM or average daily attendance, if they only have to be there just one day in 10 to receive the funding?
It's just the way the statute's always been. It's average daily membership. It's, my understanding is the precedence, the practice of what we've been doing in the state forever. I don't know how long, but I know that I've been in education or working with statutes and bills since 86 when I was a school board member, and it's been consistent since then. I know Steve's nodding his head, and it's just the way it is. And regretfully, unbelievably, if you the other side of this is I worked with Oregon welfare system. If students were skipping school, the only way that they could their parents could get the welfare check is if they brought their attendance slip and said they were there at least one in 10 days. That met the requirement of the law. And it's amazing how this has been used to circumvent good education. In just a whole range of ways.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chair.
I'll follow up.
So the example Mr. Reeder just brought by way of example, a student who was in school for 135 days and then had absences of 28 and a half days. If a student, and I've heard this, I just want to make sure that I'm with you and understand. Really, if a student shows up about one day a week to their classes, to the regular scheduled classes, that's certainly one day in 10. But if they showed up one day a week throughout the entire year, then they would be considered a full-time student under the average daily membership program.
Absolutely, and the district receives full compensation.
And irregardless of the fact that no homework had been done during the other 80% of the days skipped. And that could go on basically if there are 40 weeks of school during the year. Basically, the student could really attend 20 days of school.
Well, and what you find is when you have, if that type of pattern starts at an early age, you have then this huge gap of learning lost that there's really no way to retrieve, and then every year it just becomes exponentially harder for them to be successful because they don't have the foundations in place. And I really don't know that this is a big issue, particularly in elementaries, but working at the secondary level, like I say, students are incredibly skillful and masterful about not attending class and, you know, beating the system. And because I was absolutely challenged by a number of students when I said we were going to, you know, that my administrator says, Betty, this is your job, and I do believe in doing what my boss tells me. And they said, oh, Ms. Comp, you're never going to follow through on this. And it's like, don't challenge me on that. Because the only reason why I agreed to it is because I knew it would help the students learn, and it helped their parents know that they were in school.
Gee, I wish I'd have known this stuff in the third grade.
Well, maybe a good thing you didn't.
Well, and I won't tell on different people I talked to, but I was talking to a recent college graduate, and he goes, if my mom would have known that I skipped school on certain days, I mean, we all have a propensity to cut out once in a while. But when it becomes repetitive, it really has a huge impact.
Mr. Chair, I need to declare a conflict of interest. I spent two terms in the second grade. That was Truman and Eisenhower. So,
thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate what you're trying to do here, and I wish you were my principal. Just phenomenal when you talk about your kids. In states that have implemented this, how have they handled, again, especially at the high school level, if you do have the situation of a student that's attending only
part day
or once a week because they would prefer to be someplace else, by removing the funds, whether or not the child is there, that seat still has to be held for them.
Well, held open,
and that,
absolutely.
And that position. So I think about one of the school districts that I represent where the science and math classes are over full and there's competition to get into those seats. How have states managed this in a way that the financial penalty for students not attending doesn't undercut the ability to maintain open those seats for those students when the schools are successful at getting them back in school for the full year?
Well, what I would say is, believe it or not, they figured out, and they figured out pretty quick. Yeah, I mean, the focus that this would bring, and oh, I'm really telling tales. One of the biggest problems, what happens when you're trying to do this, and that is many teachers, not, I would say up to 15 to 20%, have a propensity to forget to take attendance. And so there's a whole multiplying effect of what's happening, what would happen here, and that is, you know, a teacher, first, as a teacher, we're only required by law to do two things, and that is take attendance because you get fiscal reimbursement, and second, to ensure that all students are learning. And so obviously both have their challenges, but you get so focused on making sure students are learning that you sometimes forget attendance. But now with electronics, the way we have things, it used to take, you know, a couple minutes or whatever to get yourself organized, take attendance. Now all the kids' pictures come up on the screen. You can take attendance with your computer in less than 15 to 20 seconds. So life has changed with technology, and so there's components that will make that won't be such a big issue, Representative Gelser, and that, yeah, it will help teachers really to make sure that they're providing the education and that the kids are, I can't describe it. I mean, I just know that it works.
Can I, just a quick follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up, yes.
Thank you. So given that there's a response because there's that fiscal motivation
right.
by the school district, in states, in these other 33 states that have done this, when they've moved to that system, has there been any sort of a gap, or did they have a strategy to cover them for that period of time from starting point, kids aren't coming to school on a regular basis, to that point where they get them in? I just would imagine there'd be a gap from learning the new system and the success at implementing the great kinds of programs that you did under your leadership in your schools.
Well, what you, also in the bill, if you would notice, when I took this to legislative council, they said, oh, you want this to be initiated right away? And I said, no.
Okay.
schools need to figure out and make sure that they have a system in place. So it would not be implemented until at least fall of 2008 so that they can take those things into consideration and, you know, plan appropriately.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Thanks.
let me just go through kind of the scenario with you, because what you're proposing and why you're proposing it, so that I have it in my mind. The idea is that attendance stinks, and schools are not being strict enough on attendance matters that there already are, and this is, I'm going to get to this question later, but there are certain attendance, and it's not good, not maybe universally, but up and down throughout the districts.
Right.
Okay, some are good, some are bad. And so basically, through this formula change, you're rewarding those that are good and taking from those that are bad in an effort to make sure the bads become goods.
Potentially, yes.
Okay. And basically trying to kind of refocus administrative attention on attendance where you think it's lax.
Yes, with the outcome that I know that if the student's in class, he'll be learning.
And I understand that justification. My question is this. Besides your experience,
mm-hmm.
do you have any statistical evidence of which schools and why they're lax? And do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, you've brought us anecdotal evidence
right.
that you've come into schools, this was not, and you changed that. But, I mean, I know when my kids were in high school, boy, I got a call so fast when one of them didn't show up that it was like, so, I mean, I felt as a parent that my school was on this like a, you know, and I guess in some way, rather than the state saying, school, get off your duff on this, through this mechanism, isn't a better mechanism to say to the school board and through your school board and through your school, And yeah, the bad parents don't do it, and the good parents know it already, but I guess this is just seems like a micromanaging by formula something that is an ongoing problem that maybe is better solved by schools understanding how important attendance is. I mean, it just seems like it's focusing on attendance, not on education. Sorry.
No, and I, Representative Berger, I really appreciate your perspective because you always help me bring it to the ground level. And I do not have statistics. I just know that all schools work really hard to make sure students are learning. All schools, somebody asked me straight out, wouldn't this really be a negative impact on Woodburn School District? And I said, actually, it's not, because there's a perception that our kids miss more school than other students of other cultures. What we have done in our school district holistically is be very high profile in making sure our students are, I mean, we have above average in many of our schools attendance, and that's above 97% attendance in our schools. It does reward the schools that are doing their job. But my point is, there's these kids that fall through the gaps. And somehow, and I don't know how, maybe this is taking out of local control, and I certainly appreciate that, but somehow we need to put a spotlight on the students that, for a number of reasons, have not been successful in school for in not just a week, not 2 weeks, but it does become years.
Can I have one other
follow-up? Yes.
Yeah. If there's another concern I have here, and this is sort of minor compared to what I just expressed, if a student is only excused, as you suggest, when sick, family emergency, or religious holidays, what happens when they're gone for activities that the school would probably subscribe to, and wouldn't it punish some high-achieving schools where the students are, say, gone to band camp or gone to, you know, are those excused absences included in this?
Yes. Any academic, any support activity from the school, whether it's sports, band, an art festival up in Portland, that's always part of their curriculum and is always excused.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because it is. It's part of the instruction.
Okay. Follow up. So under this, it would be the State Department of Education who would keep track of the percentage that are excused and unexcused by school district.
The representative from ODE is correct. Brian Reeder is very correct that somehow, yes, they would have to increase this in their data system. I assure you it's already available by all schools because we're already legislated to do this. Mark what's excused and unexcused, and so it would be an additional reporting that the school districts would have to make to Oregon Department of Education.
Got it. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. good afternoon, and thanks for being here.
Hi, Representative.
I guess my question, though, is just, and I'm not by any means that familiar with the situation you're talking about, and you obviously are, but it would seem like there would be some schools or areas of schools where just by virtue of the population that they serve, they would tend to have more problem with attendance. And it seems like, even though I know the intent of the bill is to force them to deal with that, that you're sort of penalizing them for things that they may not totally have control over. I mean,
thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. There is, because I talked to a number of people and organizations about this during the 05 session, and there was only one school district that was brought to my attention that this may fall into that exact category. And that was districts that deal with Indian tribes, Warm Springs, Madras. And I did call their superintendent, and this is just philosophic, but I mean, there was a definite sense of resignation. That's the way life is. You're not going to change people. We have dealt with achievement gaps and our challenges in the Woodburn School District for a number of years. And the one thing that we all agreed on many years ago is not to succumb to resignations, not to just accept the status quo as something that can't be improved. And when I asked the superintendent about that, and he goes, I mean, there was, I don't even remember his name, but he said, this would penalize us. There's nothing he could do about it. Mm-hmm. And so you are very accurate. There may be cultural situations that initially I think would be impacted negatively.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, if there were a higher homeless population in a particular community, wouldn't that tend to result in worse attendance problems?
Actually, the homeless students attend very well.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. It's quite the opposite.
That's interesting.
They're on free and reduced lunch, aren't they?
They have a warm place. Many of them take PE, so they have a shower. Yes, and they get their lunches and breakfast. Hmm. Yes. Actually, homeless people really are not an issue here at all.
Hmm. Thanks.
Good thinking.
Other questions or comments? Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Comp, if this worked as well statewide as it worked in your particular experience and incident, really, we're talking about this could actually benefit those schools who really get out and actively solicit the students and know where they're at, and this could be detrimental to the actual ADMs that we're reporting in schools where they are showing up one day in 10 and are still receiving full credit for it.
That's correct.
And do you? I think that if we had schools that were really not concerned about the students as much as they are the money, they'd be in here screaming like a mashed cat. But we don't see them, so would they be resigned to just say, "Hey, we will do a better job, and this is a tool that we can use"?
I think what you would find are many, many professionals that are much like I am. We are not in the art of educating and teaching for money. We really aren't. We're there because we really care about our children and we care about Oregon's future. And frequently what happens, it's what happened when we started with the No Child Left Behind Act. We have a certain criteria that's very important right now to make sure that all students are achieving. And so all of our resources and focuses have gone into that. Particularly many times, all this is an initial bookkeeping capacity in making, whether it's a teacher or a counselor or somebody else aware, you know, Johnny's been gone 3 days and he's never gone. You know, and we have, the other part of this is we have many children, and there's several people here that are immensely involved in healthcare. We have many children that have serious bouts of depression. And the only way we can help and make sure that they're getting the support services that they need that our state is also paying for so well is to pick up on these things as fast as we can to help them. Because all those things are barriers for their overall academic learning. And it's a systems thing, Representative Butler, and we haven't had the funds to put in to focusing on some of these areas because other things have taken a priority.
Follow up, if I may.
Follow up.
But if schools, if all of the schools that are receiving their ADMs right now were to recognize that they will not, that they would be in fact penalized financially for not following up on the students, really you're asking for a change of behavior here, and the actual distribution of money really shouldn't change, with the exception of perhaps in those places where they say, hey, it's part of our culture to miss school and to miss more than one day in 10, which isn't education. I don't know how you can educate 2 days a month at that particular point, but really at that particular point, if they won't change the culture, then the money goes to school districts where the students are being taught and we are going to actually produce results.
Well, and that's a good way of saying it. The other thing that happens in this whole process, and this is, as Representative Berger stated, this is anecdotal. What happens in this process is an automatic reconnection, an additional bridge building with parents, because you're following up with them. It's much like what we do with a constituent. If we don't follow up, you know, they don't know what we're doing. But if we're following up and we're building those bridges with parents, I will say this. If I hadn't done the job that I had done with attendance in our school district, I probably wouldn't be sitting here, because that's how I built great relationships with parents in my community. They knew that I adjusted my schedule so they didn't have to miss work and all those things to figure out a plan to make sure that their child was in school where they thought they were. And it really, that was the most astounding consequence that that whole policy was building bridges and getting our parents re-engaged with what's happening with their children.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. I appreciate your bringing this bill and your very enlightening and cogent testimony today.
Well, thank you. And whatever the committee's discretion is, I completely respect that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there others who want to be heard today on this bill? Looks like we have a standing room only.
The cadre.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in reviewing the bill and then having the opportunity to listen to Representative Comp's testimony, the objective is not in debate. Children coming to school through whatever means is at our disposal is at the top of the list. It's very hard to teach young people who aren't at school. The question, I think, before the committee is whether you will penalize school districts as a result of children not coming to school, or take another approach. And the problem with the bill is that whether a student shows up one day, every 10 days, every 2 days, every three, we have to have that chair there. We have to have the teacher, the building, hopefully an aide, a school bus traveling, and I can go, you know the list. It's the entire budget of a school district continues to have to be available to that student throughout the year. There is no other way to deal with it for us. We are required to have that opportunity available, whether the student is there or not. The question the question isn't whether students ought to be coming to school. It's whether or not this is the way you encourage students to come to school. Do you penalize school districts or schools where students, for whatever reason, are absent, whether in ones, twos, fives, tens, whatever it is? And we've heard, and I guess the difficulty in responding to this, and a number of you have asked the questions that I think answer the issues that we would raise, but, you know, if you're in a county where an excused absence is traditional, like I'm hunting with Dad, is that student absent? You know, is it what in fact defines an excused absence? Is it the fault of the parents or the responsibility of the schools? Is it the responsibility of the school, of the parent, or the fault of the schools? And you're facing that dilemma, I think, as you look at a bill like this. We have a variety of tools currently in use to encourage schools to have students in regular attendance. And I just have you look at the current No Child Left Behind law, which has us tracking students individually. I think at no time in the history of education have we worked harder at developing individual information on students, to the point that if in certain size school districts, if a student is absent on the day of a test, and the test is recorded, the schools are rated as non-conforming as a result of that student's absence, whether by the student's choice or in some cases the parent's choice to withhold the, to keep the student home. There are a variety of penalties that then can come into effect. What we'd ask you to do is not try to use the funding formula for what is a more complicated social problem, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't hold us responsible and demand absolutely the very best we can do in assuring student attendance. Withholding money does not result in a situation like the one described by Representative Comp, where her district apparently had the ability or made the decision to assign a full-time administrator to attendance duties. Fantastic. We would love to have you fund education in this state statewide to the point that we could have an administrator, a teacher, an aide, a parent, to come in and do the kind of attendance work that's been done in Woodburn. And I think if you had an opportunity to look, and if we had the statistics available, I think that's one of the difficulties here, you'd find that that is the kind of work that's going on out there. Attendance is an extremely important part of what's going on in the school districts. The difficulty is there really is a lack of statistics to either support or deny the suggestion that this is the right kind of policy course. There's a lot of work to be done here if this is the way you would want to go, if it is really going to be a penalty system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think we'll hear from the rest of the panel, if that's okay, and we'll take questions at the end. Go ahead.
Sure. My name is Otto Schell. I'm the Vice President for Legislation with the Oregon PTA. I didn't come prepared to testify today, and I think Chuck's covered a lot of the positions that we would be concerned about, but I think sitting in the back of the room hearing the presentation as it was laid out for you all, I think that a couple things came to mind, and I'm here on behalf of all those parents that are out doing what their tasks, their jobs to, you know, make sure those kids have a place to go home to. The punishment angle is a problem when you, as a parent and as a volunteer with PTA, I go to a lot of schools. I talk to a lot of communities about the challenges that each community faces. The kids that we are concerned about won't necessarily benefit from this type of punitive plan. And I also worry about the kids like my seventh grader who has perfect attendance. He would be penalized too if you implemented a plan like this, because all the things that the district need to educate him and his other fine attending student friends, they would, you know, be on the short end of this kind of program. So have those kids in mind too. I agree with Chuck and some of the observations that were made from the panel that if you're trying to encourage a certain type of behavior, a stick isn't always the best device. There has to be another way that we can encourage families to understand that it isn't okay in the modern education system, that your culture has to be rethought, perhaps, what's going to be best for your kids, what's going to be best for all those kids that are in attendance, and why they need to be in the door. And there are ways that we can encourage parents to do better. A lot of the parents that we would try to reach with this kind of a plan won't even know that it exists. It'll just put a different burden on the school systems that already have a lot of other high bars and few resources. So,
thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and committee members. Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. And of course, we are very grateful to Representative Comp for her passion in education and for her passion for the students. And I appreciate very much that she's thinking about ways to improve the ability of all kids to access a high-quality education and therefore opportunity. But having said that, we do have concerns about using the distribution formula as anything but a way to fairly distribute the amount that's allocated from Ways and Means to the state school fund, and that accounts for uncontrollable cost factors. We similarly would oppose using the distribution formula to incent full-day kindergarten offering, for example. We don't think that those things that are matters of choice or conduct that are controllable ought to be elements for the distribution formula. If we have to have a policy in some other way to get at this problem, that's fine, but this may not be the right way to do that. And again, I also feel that it's possible that if we were able to run the numbers, we'd find that it is the very students who are going to school but whose peers do not, who end up getting punished by the withdrawal of funds. So it doesn't seem to me to be a very logical way to get at what is being requested here. We also worry that there might be a fiscal impact to the Department of Education for the extra data collection, reporting, and analysis. And we also think that that the schools still have responsibility for every kid, the kid who's at perfect attendance or the kid who's at spotty attendance. But those kids are still part of the school system until they have reached the point at which they have decided to drop out. And that if we have incentives that help them stay in school, if we have a more fully funded program with all the enrichment and extracurriculars, professional technical programs for those who aren't college-bound, and so on, you tend to have more reasons for students to come to school. They will feel that is a place for them to go to build their future. And so that might be a better way to approach the issue of whether a student is going to school. Figure out why they're at risk, figure out what we need to do to help keep them in school, and put our resources there and not use the distribution formula to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments for this panel? Representative Witt.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. There are a whole lot of components that lead to excellence in education, and I guess the extent to which we engage students is in large part the measure of that academic success. I would be in full agreement with Representative Comp that it is exceedingly difficult to begin that engagement without the physical presence. But there are a lot of other factors that lead to academic excellence. I was talking to a parent only last night who had two students in the public school system who were failing academically. The mother during the period of their academic failure was employed in the evenings. Then her students became honor roll students, and their mother was employed during the daytime and home in the evenings. It wasn't a matter of the students being in an atmosphere where at one point their mother cared any less when she was employed in the evening, and in fact cared so much that she changed jobs in order to arrange her presence when her children were home. I guess what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is our schools oftentimes are a reflection of what's going on in our much larger society. And while I would support requiring students to have the physical presence, we at every turn must be mindful that that's not the only thing that leads to excellence, and that there are many families that face some very challenging circumstances. And I would tell you that I suspect in my district and across our state, there may be a lot of parents that, for whatever reason, no matter how badly they would choose to be home when their children are home, don't have the ability, for one reason or another, to be able to make that change of careers as this parent did.
Thank you, Representative Witt. Other thoughts today? Thank you very much, Mr. Reeder. I would be interested in knowing, and we don't need to know today, but I would be interested in knowing what the difficulty would be, if any, in actually collecting that data that Representative Comp's bill depends upon. I think that might be instructive for us, even if we don't adopt a bill like this. And perhaps you could get back to us when you have some sense as to what that might entail and whether there'd be a fiscal involved in it. I appreciate it. Anything else? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2396. Our business for today is concluded, and we are adjourned.